Florida did flatten the curve, but the pandemic is still with us, and people are still getting sick with coronavirus. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, why COVID cases are on the rise again in Northeast Florida. Did we open back up too soon? Give us a call. It's 549-2937 to join us. Then later, we speak with one of the local leaders of the protest movement calling for police reform in Jacksonville. But first this hour, COVID rising again in Northeast Florida. Mayor Lenny Curry said on Tuesday afternoon, the percentage of positive COVID cases has dropped in this city compared to the city's peak. But at the same time, he admitted the number of new cases each day is trending upward as people return to work, bars, restaurants, other activities. Here is the mayor speaking to reporters yesterday.
We have flattened the curve in Jacksonville, which was always the goal. Hospital capacities have returned to pre-COVID levels over the last few weeks. We've also seen a decline in the number of positive COVID patients transported by our Jacksonville Fire and Rescue Department.
Now, that said, Curry was also quick to point out we aren't out of the woods yet when it comes to the pandemic and the risk of transmission. Take a listen to this.
The virus is with us, and we all play a part in protecting ourselves, our family, and our neighbors. If you're in a store where it's dense and there's a lot of people, please wear a mask, frequently wash your hands, sanitize, and continue to practice social distancing where possible.
All good advice. All of this said, cases are spiking again across the state of Florida. Here in our area, a number of bars at the beaches have had to close just after reopening as their employees and patrons have tested positive for COVID. One healthcare worker and 15 friends in Jack's Beach tested positive for coronavirus after going to Lynch's, along with seven employees there. So we're beginning the hour with a closer look at this as WJCT's Sky LeBron joins us now in studio. Sky, good morning.
Hey.
Thanks for being with us. And here's our question to callers. Do you feel like Florida might have reopened a bit too soon when it comes to dealing with coronavirus, or was it just time? How should we continue to mitigate the risks of this disease? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. So, Sky, as we heard the mayor say, in the main, Florida had flattened the curve when it came to coronavirus. But then after the Memorial Day reopening, we're starting to see cases rise again. And that can be attributed to increased testing, but also the fact that people are just getting back to their regular lives. And not all of them are doing what the mayor recommended. They're not always wearing masks or practicing social distancing. They're crowding into bars out at the beaches where the disease is spreading.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but one thing that I've noticed has been as time has gone on, now we're in mid-June, I'm seeing less and less people utilize masks when they're out in public. Whenever I'm going shopping, whenever I'm doing something outside of my home, I make sure that I'm wearing a mask, but I gotta say, I've been in the minority, and Mayor Curry has made it a more of a suggestion. You can't lambast people that are wearing a mask, but you also can't criticize, you shouldn't be criticizing people that aren't wearing a mask as well. We've seen other places in Florida where that has become a mandate. That is, You have to, in order to get into the store, you need to have a mask on or else you're not going to get helped. But here it's been a little bit more lax, and I think that that's played a big factor as well.
It really is up to the individual business. I went to get a haircut after months of that salon being closed, and inside that salon, they only allowed in one customer at a time. You had to do a temperature check. Everybody's wearing masks. The salon techs are wearing gloves. That's one way that type of business is working to prevent spread of the virus. But plenty of other businesses aren't doing anything. And so as we saw, a healthcare worker and more than two dozen of her friends tested positive for COVID after they all got together at Lynch's Irish Pub at the beach. That bar and some other bars at the beaches have closed back down again right after reopening because they need to do a deep cleaning and they're worried about the spread of the disease.
Yeah, and one thing that Mayor Curry has also brought up, I find it very interesting that he's gone back to the peak. He'll say, you know, we flattened the curve and this compared to the peak is nothing compared to what we saw just a couple months ago. One thing that I would like to mention is he says that it continues to decline or flatline. We did see a sharp, or not a sharp, we did see a slight increase from last week. Last week, we were around 2.7 to 2.8 of a positive percentage, and now that's risen slightly. So he's going back to the peak. Of course, it's going to be a huge decrease from the 6.3% that we were seeing at one point, but it is starting to increase little by little.
Let us know your thoughts about the state's reopening as COVID cases start spiking again here in our area and around Florida. Are you tired of wearing masks, social distancing, all that stuff, or do you feel like we need to remain vigilant? It's 549-2937. You know, Duval County did see a record 80 new cases over the last 24 hours. We are past 60 deaths in this county alone from COVID. At the same time, we are seeing the rise of the disease around Florida. And, you know, it's interesting to talk about this because on the one hand, as you pointed out, Sky, we're seeing increased testing. We're also seeing more people crowd into bars and restaurants and stores. We've also had a number of protests around the state, some of which you've covered here in Jacksonville, with thousands of people in close proximity to each other taking part in Black Lives Matter protests. So there are a number of ways that this disease could have been spreading over the last few weeks.
Oh, 100%. It's going to be interesting to see over the next couple weeks. And with that, I don't think Jacksonville has had the same number of protests and turnout as other major cities have seen. We've seen thousands and thousands of people gathered on a daily basis for some different cities. Jacksonville really hasn't seen that. There has been weekends where there's been thousands of people showing up, but they're also, the protests have been more spread out. But over the next couple of weeks, since this isn't something that you determine, oh, I have COVID and I found out, I got tested 45 minutes ago and I just found out. In many cases, mm-hmm. you have to wait a number of days before you find out. So that it's going to be the next couple of weeks that we start discovering, have the protests have had huge impacts on the number of cases that are being seen here.
That's right. We work in downtown Jacksonville across the street from TIAA Bank Field. And in the last couple of days, after much less attendance or much less interest, all of a sudden, the downtown Lot J COVID testing site is jammed up again with cars stretched as far as you can see, with people waiting to get their COVID test. So there's definitely been a resurgence in interest in getting tested. We've seen it with our own eyes here at the station. And, you know, against the backdrop of all of this, of course, Jacksonville is preparing to host Donald Trump's acceptance speech at the Republican National Convention in August. And there has been some angst about that, whether appropriate pandemic measures will be taken at this big event inside ViStar Arena.
And Mayor Curry made it clear yesterday in his press conference with the media that he wants things to be opened at full capacity when everything opens up in August. He's saying, we don't know where we're going to be in August. We hope that it's even lesser than it is right now. And with that, we're going to take measures to make it, we're going to prepare as if we're going to have a full convention. So it doesn't sound like there's going to be many limitations when it comes to capacity. One thing that GOP Duval Chair Dean Black said is that there should be extra sanitization and there should be temperature checks at the door. Mm-hmm. Don't know how that is going to be when it comes to getting into the convention with thousands of people pouring in, making sure that everybody's doing a temperature check. If you don't have that, how are you going to then get out of line? And how is that entire process going to work? I think it's going to be interesting to get more specifics over the next few weeks to months.
As we get closer to it, let's go to your calls now. COVID cases are spiking once again in Florida, here in our area. Bars at the beaches have had to close after becoming a bit of a cluster for transmitting cases. What are your thoughts about how we're handling the pandemic? 549-2937. Chuck is in World Golf Village. Hey, Chuck, good morning.
Good morning. Well, basically, you just addressed my concern. Is the National Republican Convention coming up in August? And my understanding is that we're looking at 300,000 people coming into our community, and I'm it appears to me to be a pressure cooker of a situation where you've got a lot of people from out of the area And not only can the disease be transmitted, but then we're taking it to other parts of the country. So I'm just interested in your opinion on that.
Thanks, Chuck. You know, the whole argument for landing the convention, at least one night of it, which is basically what we're getting, Sky, is the national attention, the economic positive impact to hotels, restaurants. The argument against it, of course, is the whole reason the president is coming here is because North Carolina, Charlotte, North Carolina, wouldn't allow him to do the kind of event that he's going to do here in Jacksonville. They insisted on social distancing and a smaller crowd so as to prevent the transmission of the disease. So this is why we're here, because Jacksonville said yes, despite COVID concerns, and Charlotte, North Carolina said no.
Yeah, and Mary Curry's argument for that yesterday was that it's because of how Jacksonville has done in response to the outbreak of COVID. But I think something that we're seeing just at the beaches is that, I mean, there can be outbreaks anywhere, no matter how you've done as an entirety of a city. We've seen plenty of outbreaks going on across a few of the restaurants and businesses, and what's to say that can't happen in August as people that are from out of this state, maybe across the country, are pouring into Jacksonville and coming. And I'm just saying, who's to say that that can't happen again? These outbreaks that we're seeing right now at the beaches can't happen again at a wider scale, because now we're seeing there's going to be hotel capacity in Flagler. There's going to be hotel capacity in Nassau, as well as St. John's. I'm sure there's going to be more people than usual in Clay County as well.
Let's go to Terry in Mandarin. Hey, Terry, good morning to you.
Hi. Yeah, I'm calling about the mask. Mm-hmm. And I am a mask wearer, and I'm still sort of on lockdown myself because other people are not wearing their masks. So I don't get out as much, but I just don't understand if you can, you know, teach, you know, 5-year-olds to stand in line, why it's so hard for someone to wear a mask, stand 6 feet away from someone, you know?
Yeah.
We wouldn't be having this problem again. We're probably going to wind up on lockdown in another month if it continues on the way it's going.
Thanks, Terry. You know, let me just fully disclose that here at WJCT, we are all expected, the few of us that are still in the building, we're expected to wear a mask when we're at work, when we're in the common areas of this workplace. When I go to Publix or Fresh Market or any grocery store, I put on a mask. But as you pointed out, Sky, it's voluntary in this community. And we know that universal mask wearing, along with frequent hand washing and social distancing, are the proven ways we can flatten the curve and reduce transmission of COVID-19. But she's right, that caller, Terry in Mandarin, fewer and fewer people out there are doing these things because for whatever reason, whether they're tired of it or they don't believe it's needed, as these practices decline, we could see enough of a resurgence at some point that we'd have to lock everything down again.
Yeah, and Governor DeSantis said yesterday that that will not happen. He does not want to see a closure again, and I'm sure they're going to take measures at every single possible scenario so that they don't have to close down the state in any capacity again. But sadly, it seems like this has become, mask wearing has become kind of a political thing. It has been over the last month or couple months. And one thing that people need to realize is, especially as people start going back to work, you have to do it for your coworkers as well, because even if you're in close contact, as soon as you're in close contact with them, you may be completely asymptomatic. You may still be positive for coronavirus, and you don't know your coworkers' home situations. They could be home with older individuals, and this could be a big risk for them to even be going into work. And even if you're at the store, a lot of people need to go get their necessities. So they may have a home situation where they're with an older parent or an older individual, and this could affect them, as we know it disproportionately affects elderly people.
Lots of tweets coming into the show. So many people weighing in about this. Carrie tweets us, I think allowing everyone to go to the beaches and the parks was fine, But it gave us a false sense of reopening rather than adapting. And I think the city rushed the next steps too fast. Masks should be mandatory, and that's impossible at restaurants and bars. Tom in Ponte Vedra. Hello, Tom. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Love the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, the last caller was pretty much what I was calling to say about, but with this recent spread and the spike of this virus, I just wanted to touch on the fact that leadership starts at the top. And for the people who may be confused and our president refuses to wear a mask, you know, for whatever reasons, but if he were to demonstrate that wearing a mask allows us to be safer and it can stop the spread and we all want to open the economy up and, you know, get on with our lives. And if we did that, it would be very helpful. And I'm always surprised that they refuse to do that. And it just seems astounding to me.
Thanks, Tom.
Because the lives that we could save, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is certainly a fact that mask wearing works. It helps. We need to give Mayor Curry credit for not only encouraging mask wearing, but also modeling that as a leader and being photographed and shown wearing a mask when he is talking about this. That encourages others to do the same. But again, it is not a mandate in this community. It's still a suggestion.
Yeah, you think it's such a small deal to take a picture with a mask, but it really goes to show political leaders have such pull when it comes to the importance of issues. We saw President Trump a while back. He refused to wear a mask when he went to tour a factory. And then we saw also Vice President Mike Pence also chose not to wear a mask when he went to the Mayo Clinic and then walked back on that and said, I should have been wearing a mask. But that all has a huge factor into whether people are going to think wearing a mask is something I need to do or not.
Here's an email from a listener. When I'm at home, I'm often the only one now wearing a mask when I venture out, and I get strange looks. But right now, we are visiting the Asheville area where masks are required inside and even in parts of parks. And I feel way more comfortable here. Both of my kids have commented on the difference, too. My 8-year-old even said, it feels like we are normal here, but weirdos at home when we wear them. So depending on what part of the country you're in, cultural norms are playing a part.
Yeah, I was just in South Florida a couple of weeks back visiting my parents. And over there, everybody is wearing a mask. You can't go in most stores without being told to leave if you don't have a mask. But then you go here and it is a completely different feel, and it's crazy to think that we're in the same state.
Yeah, Florida's a big state. Let's go to Angela in Intercoastal West. Hi, Angela. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to comment on the mask wearing and what I'm observing here in Jacksonville, and that is practically nobody is wearing masks, and it's really very disturbing because I do believe it's a mixed message coming from the government, both our mayor and our governor, because, yeah, like you said, our mayor is wearing a mask, but then we have the governor saying, I don't really know how I would enforce wearing masks. That wouldn't be possible, and so I'm not going to mandate it. And then the mayor isn't mandating it. He might be wearing it on TV, which is great, but he's not mandating it. And so all of a sudden, you're seeing clusters. If the convention is coming here and they've made a promise to us to ensure our safety, then why aren't they mandating this now before the problem gets worse? And frankly, it wasn't too long ago that the governor was saying, well, you know, we have coronavirus because of people coming in from New York and New Jersey. Well, now they're going to be coming in from all over the country, and we are taking no precautions whatsoever in Jacksonville.
Thanks, Angela. You know, whether or not masks are mandated, Sky, it's cultural, it's also political, and it's also dependent on how much disease a community has. Right.
Yeah. And I think she brought up a very interesting point, something that I mentioned earlier, which is when we bring this convention here, there's going to be people from all over, and it, frankly, also a lot of journalists from all over the country as well. There's just going to be an outpouring of people coming in, and it's just a wild card. You just don't know what these people, have they been practicing social distancing? Have they come from areas where there's been high concentrations of outbreaks? Like I said, it's just a wild card that we just got to wait and see what happens.
Kate on the north side. Hello, Kate.
Hey, we're a local business owner, and we cater to a lot of older customers. We require every customer that comes in to wear a mask. Mm. Not only have we lost customers and, like, you know, we've had angry emails, but we've had customers that are belligerent to our employees, which, you know, as owners, we don't feel like our employees should be on the front line and receiving all this anger. But at the same time, we have to have the people, our customers, wearing masks.
Can you tell us, what's your business, Kate?
We own Woodcraft down on Beach.
Woodcraft. Okay. Well, yes. I just want to give you a moment to plug your business. And I'm sorry to hear that, but I applaud you for protecting your employees and your customers. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Kate. And that is common, Sky. Businesses are dealing with angry customers, and sometimes it's the other way around. Customers are telling business owners, you've lost my business because you're not being safe enough.
Yeah.
I'm going to take, I know one woman who said, I've been taking my dog to a vet in the San Juan over in Avondale, Ortega for 25 plus years. And she said, she took the dog in recently for an exam. Nobody had on masks. She was shocked that medical people, veterinarians, weren't making this a priority. And when she brought it up, she said the vet and his staff got huffy, and she told them, I'm taking my business elsewhere. I can't believe this after almost 30 years, but I don't appreciate your lack of concern about this. So it cuts both ways.
Yeah. And we've seen that with some of the most recent outbreaks have been because some of these businesses haven't taken the precautions that were necessary. And it's hard as a customer. And if you especially are in one of those situations that I mentioned earlier, you have an older person at home, or you're just concerned for your own safety, or you have health issues before, it's hard to walk into a business, not see anybody practicing social distancing or any of the measures that are supposed to be put in place, and then say, I want to continue coming here. I feel like this business is looking at my best interests. It's hard to feel that way.
As we're talking with WJTT's Sky LeBron, we're getting so much feedback looking at the spike in COVID cases in our area and a bit of a cluster at bars at the beach as they've had to close down again. Kelly emails us and says, I find the unwillingness of people to compromise so frustrating. They demanded we open back up, but they're now unwilling to meet in the middle by wearing masks. I wear one, but others do not. So who is protected? They are. Me and my family remain at risk because of others' silly need to dig in their heels on this. And so, you know, that is simply the fact of the matter, that if you're wearing a mask, you are protecting others, not yourself. So when you put on a mask, what you're saying is, I'm looking out for everybody else at the store, at the bar, wherever you go. It's to help others. Paula emails the show, the convention goers who refuse to mask up are merely following the president. A guy that's a bit of an anti-Trump tweet. I won't read the whole tweet. Here's an email, or excuse me, a tweet from Dan. The protests, the Black Lives Matter protests, are the only place in Duval where I've seen everyone wearing a mask, he says. All right, let's go to Patty in Volano Beach. Hi, Patty.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Just a thought about more testing yields more positive results, but I think that's incomplete because anybody testing positive would be, say, self-quarantining, which would bring the positive circulation of people down out of the population. So I think if there's more to it than more testing, it means more positive results.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to say is when I go out and about here in Volano Beach, I noticed the people wearing masks are families with younger kids, seemingly protecting the kids, and older people like me who are more vulnerable. So that's just a, you know, an observation.
Sure.
And finally, I don't make a statement about it, but I don't patronize businesses who don't promote, you know, the safety measures. I just don't go in there.
Patty, thanks for that. Here's an email from a healthcare worker. He says, I work at a hospital and I found out a coworker tested positive but still came to work. We found out through other coworkers, not from supervisors. COVID positive patients are being wheeled through the hallways to different floors. This will never end if this is the way COVID is being handled in the local hospital. Do we know what the ICU beds are at right now, Sky? The mayor has said they are not at capacity.
Yeah, he says they are currently at pre-COVID capacity. So it's not like we've seen an increased. There has been a small number of hospitalizations that have happened in Duval County, but I still don't think that we're seeing anything near capacity. At least that's what has been told to us.
Ira on the south side. Hello, Ira. Hi, Ira. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. Melissa, could you help me understand? I'm an old guy. I'm over 65, so I'm in that zone. But can you help me understand what the Duval percentage of testing standard is? It seems to me that if we have 500,000 people in Duval County, we should be doing 500,000 tests on everybody, 100%. But I keep hearing that it's 1% or 3%. And I'm just confused. And the mayor keeps crowing about successes, but if we're only rushing to a 1% testing level, to me that doesn't make statistical sense. Could you help me with that? Thank you.
Thank you, Ira. You know, we are actually testing above a lot of other places around Florida, Sky, but Ira is correct. It's between 1% and 3% of the population. And that's true for much of the country, because we don't have a comprehensive national testing program and a comprehensive national contact tracing effort. It's a patchwork of efforts being done at the local level around the country.
Yeah, I forget what the exact number is for Jacksonville. I wrote it in one of my stories, but I remember a couple weeks ago, Mayor Curry had he had cited a Harvard study that said how many tests needed to be conducted on a daily basis in order to really be doing what's considered a good job of testing. And he said that we were past that. And there has been a number of testing sites that have continued to pop up across the city. So there are a number of places to get tested. And then the number that he continues to bring up is the percentage positive as opposed to the number of people that are being tested total, which he says currently hovers at around 2.8-2.9%. So around 3% of the people that are getting tested are testing positive.
Yeah. And when you compare the national response in the U.S. to other countries, it's simply a fact to say that it's been inadequate. Other countries have engaged in far more widespread testing, contact tracing, and other measures to better get a grip on this. So, and that's not to knock the local efforts. They've done the best they can, I think, with the resources they have. And for something like this, you really need a national effort. Jimmy in Riverside, go ahead, Jimmy.
This is just amazing to me, and thank you for taking my call, that we're listening to millionaires and we're not listening to scientists. If you ever watch Gilligan's Island, they never listened to the millionaire. It was always
the professor.
He was going to keep them alive. And I'm just not getting why, like, at minimum, mandatory mask anytime you're in public. That's just a minimum. And again, you know, I'm not, you know, here to bash anyone, but we have a president that is not leading us in this. I don't care about his politics. I'm merely talking about leading us and keeping us safe. You know, to tour a mask plant and to not wear a mask, I mean, like, that is sending the wrong message. We have higher expectations for our athletes than we do for our president. If an athlete goes around like the guy that when he tested positive in the NBA and he rubbed the microphone, they lambasted him for that because it was immature and irresponsible behavior when we are in a health crisis such as we are. And thank you for taking my call.
Thanks, Jimmy. All of that said, and lots of folks wanted to weigh in, Sky. What else did the mayor have to say about how Jacksonville is going to handle the pandemic in the next weeks?
I mean, he's been saying that pretty much the same thing for a while, which is that people need to continue to use their judgment and make smart decisions. And it all comes down to what people are choosing to do. Once again, he says when you're going out running, you don't need to have a mask on. But when you're in close contact in a business or when you're in close contact at the store or something, then you need to be wearing a mask. And then a lot of the questions that were asked to him, not surprisingly, were geared toward the RNC and how he plans to get things settled for the RNC. One thing, he seemed a little bit frustrated when he brought up that this has just been announced within the past week and a lot of people are asking for specifics. How's this going to be handled? How's that going to be handled? And he's saying, you know, when it comes to law enforcement and stuff, yeah, we're going to be covering some of that, but a lot of this stuff is out of our hands. It's going to be funded privately. There's going to be other ways and other entities that are going to be handling a lot of it. And frankly, there's just not that many details available just yet with around 68, 67 days before the actual event gets started. He seemed a little bit frustrated with the specifics he was being asked.
Well, we will continue to try to nail those down. And I thank you, WJCT's Sky LeBron, for joining us.
You're welcome, Melissa.
Much more still ahead later. It's our What's Good Wednesday today, spotlighting some good happening in this time. But up next, local protest leader Christina Kittle on Black Lives Matter and police reform in Duval. That's after this.
Hi, this is David McGowan, CEO here at WJCT, and I'd like to say thank you to all of you who helped us meet our goal during our fundraising drive last week. We are here for you, and you were there for us. Thank you.
Electro Lounge is now on Spotify. On the road or at home, take us wherever you go. Just search WJCT 89.9 on Spotify, where the Electro Lounge is always on.
Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson.
Together, we host the Florida Roundup, a weekly live statewide call-in show looking at the biggest issues impacting the Sunshine State. If it's making news in Florida, you'll hear it on the Florida Roundup. So join us each Friday at noon, right here on 89.9 WJCT. Welcome back. Black Lives Matter protests continue across the nation and here in our area as activists continue to press law enforcement on a number of reforms they're calling for, like in our area, a civilian review board to look at police-involved shootings and the release of body cam video of these incidents. One of the local protest leaders is Christina Kittle with the Jacks Community Action Committee, and she's on the line. Christina, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me on.
There have been a number of protests in our area with thousands of people calling for police accountability and trying to put the focus on the importance of Black lives. What are your thoughts about these efforts? We've seen multiracial, multiethnic, multigenerational groups coming out to make their voices heard.
Yeah, so we work directly with the families that have been affected by these crimes. So, like you said, it is a multiracial, multi-ethnic group. It's not, you know, just Black lives. However, you know, they are the most at risk, given the history and dynamic of our country. But yeah, there's a lot of different people who are involved of all different races, and you know, everyone's just finally had enough. People are tired of their children being killed. So, you know, we're banding together to finally have some accountability for it.
And so when you talk about accountability, what kind of interactions have you had with JSO when you press these demands?
Well, it's a range of interactions. So I myself was beaten and unlawfully arrested in 2017 in a case that was called the Jacks Five. so I had to fight my own legal battle and prove my own innocence. Thankfully, there was camera footage, not their body camera footage. It was before then, but, you know, there was other camera footage that got released and helped our case and get the charges dropped for us. However, since then, since we've been fighting to get accountability, we haven't had much progress, really. So we've had things like $17 million was spent in, or passed in 2017 budget cycle to get them body cameras. But now we have an issue with them releasing the footage. So, you know, every time there's a little bit of success, there's some kind of pushback, something's in the way. So it's still a battle.
Mm. But at the same time, now by wide majorities, Americans support these protests and the principles behind them. There's really been a sea change on these issues in the American body politic, and it's due to the activism of people like you and many others. And this has been years in the making. So as you reflect on this, how do you see this movement going forward?
I just see this movement going forward to victory, because people don't forget when you kill their family members. People don't forget when you break up their family, or, you know, in my case, when you try to ruin their character and do all these things. Like, people just don't move on, even if the media moves on to a different story, or if social media moves on to something else that's trending. People in the community don't forget. You can't heal from trauma when the wound is still bleeding. So, you know, we're going to get accountability. It's going to happen.
You're calling for accountability, and there's widespread support for that. That said, a number of activists around the country have called for defunding the police, abolishing the police altogether. In Minneapolis, that city council took a vote to do just that. And I want to ask you about that, because that has far less popular support. Is calling for abolishing or defunding the police a bridge too far for people who would otherwise support the movement you're part of?
So I think what people need to understand with the call to defund the police, that's just a very popular hashtag, so that's what's going to trend. However, I do agree with the idea of, at least in our case, cutting JSO's funding in half. As it stands right now, JSO makes 40 cents for every city dollar that is spent, so they make 40% of our entire city budget. Our group, Jacksonville Community Action Committee, we are advocating for a people's budget, meaning just cut JSO's budget in half, 20%. That is still very generous, but cap it at that so that they can't ever make more than that. And then that frees up millions of dollars that can go to more preventative actions, because you can't out-police crime. That has been proven. Every year that they get more and more of the budget, we haven't seen a significant drop in crime. So the police are a reaction to crime that has already happened. However, there are social roots to crime that have been proven. So you can reinvest into the community to help prevent measures, but you can't do that if JSO is getting 40% of the entire city budget. So I do believe in defunding, in the sense that we're taking from their already bloated budget and redistributing it to the rest of the community.
In order to do something like that, you would need the city council to change their budget priorities. And how likely is that, given the makeup of the Jacksonville City Council?
So that has been a struggle that we've had for the last 3 years, explicitly for the last 3 years and longer before that even. But the thing about it is, when we do see council members who do try to speak up, they are directly threatened. In some cases, their jobs have been threatened. I know that council member Garrett Dennis actually vocally was probably one of the only ones recently in the last budget cycle who didn't support an increase, and he was threatened on social media by the Fraternal Order of Police president. And, you know, there's been Katrina Brown in the past tried to help, and then her job was, you know, under investigation all of a sudden. Same with council member Reggie Brown, who tried to help in the past.
Well, Katrina and Reggie Brown, you know, they committed crimes that they were convicted of that were completely unrelated to this. So I just want to disclose that.
It's just interesting after they become vocal about it. You know what I mean? I just find it a little funny, but true. But also, they were threatened directly for supporting this, you know. So, and then Garrett Dennis, they tried to open a Sunshine Law case on him, but they couldn't find anything because he doesn't have anything. But so they just resorted to, and by they, I just mean Fraternal Order of Police President, who, you know, the sheriff has made clear he doesn't control his actions. So.
And we're going to reach out to the local FOP to invite them onto this program, we should also point out. And let me ask you as well, here's an email from a listener, Ricardo. All of these reforms have been studied and guidelines have been issued. Has JSO and other area law enforcement agencies ever implemented the reforms that came out of the Police Reform Commission put together after Michael Brown's death in Ferguson, Missouri?
Maybe they have, but our community hasn't seen it, is what I'm saying, because we have two-time killer cop Tyler Landerville, who's still out there, who kicked in the teeth of Brittany Williams recently. We have J.C. Noble, who has been on the force for years, who has killed five people, his most recent victim being Leah Baker, whose mother was with us marching for accountability because their daughter was having a mental health breakdown, and she was shot to death as a response. So, I mean, no matter what policies they're saying that they're implementing, the community's just not seeing them.
Hmm. You know, the protests were huge and largely peaceful. The majority of people out marching and protesting were wearing masks. That said, are you concerned at all that these large-scale protests could further spread COVID-19?
There's always going to be that fear. I'm not going to pretend like I don't care about that. That is definitely something. However, we did have a company, Strata, I think they're called, and I'm sorry if I'm getting their name wrong, but they donated 3,000 masks. We ourselves had money to donate it for extra masks, and I see people who are making their own masks for the cause who are out there handing them out. So, and we have like just a bunch of hand sanitizer that we have donated. So we're being really cautious about that. And we have tents set up in medic areas for people whose masks get dirty, who want hand sanitizer, who come just to kind of refresh and all that stuff. So to the best of our ability, we are trying to be very conscious about trying to get our voices heard, show our numbers, but not, you know, continue to spread COVID-19.
And do you plan any further actions?
Yeah, there's definitely actions coming up in the future. The most recent one, though, is going to be, we'll be at the Melanin Market on Soutelle for Juneteenth. And that's more of a celebration, but, you know, we will still have our setup there for more information about police accountability and ways for people to get involved.
And that's this Friday. She's Christina Kittle with the Jacksonville Community Action Committee, part of the local leadership leading Black Lives Matter protests here in Jacksonville and calling for police accountability. Christina, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
A quick break, and after this, a look at what's good this Wednesday. We'll be right back.
One Florida Clinical Research Consortium invites essential workers in healthcare to join the HERO Registry and share how the COVID-19 pandemic has impacted their lives with researchers from the University of Florida and nationwide. Clinical and non-clinical personnel can register online to tell their story at heroesresearch.org, because the best way to thank healthcare heroes is to learn from them.
I'm Robin Young. At Snopes.com, they're in the business of debunking fake news, but even they were stunned at lies floating around after the George Floyd killing.
We're even seeing this conspiracy theory emerge. There's some people questioning whether or not Floyd has even died.
Of course he did. What's absolutely true, next time, here and now.
this afternoon at 1 here on 89.9 WJCT.
Black Lives Matter activists have protested police killings of African Americans for years, one after the next. With George Floyd, something changed.
All of a sudden, you have an introduction of a lot of white people who are also angry with the government. Now you're forced to wear a mask, you're anonymous, away we go.
What makes this moment different? This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
What word would you say best sums up working at a distance right now? A challenge? A chore? Or a break from the office cubicle? As more of us get used to a virtual working world, some are finding it easier than others. We'll get tips on how best to adapt next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, we're going to give a little gratitude this week. It's time for What's Good Wednesdays, the point each midweek when we focus on good things happening in the community, even in the midst of a recession and a pandemic. And that includes JDRF North Florida, the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. They're giving supporters a special gift right now, a cloth mask to protect against COVID. Brooks Biagini is executive director of JDRF North Florida. She's on the line along with Anastasia Albanese O'Neill, clinical assistant professor and director of diabetes education and clinic operations at UF and a board member at JDRF. Ladies, good morning.
Good morning.
Good to have you both on the show. Brooks, COVID-19 is really impacting people with diabetes along with nonprofits like yours. So you're doing some reimagining. And that includes a really cool effort. Tell us about these masks that you're making and giving supporters.
Yes. So the Stronger Together mask fundraiser was created to help bridge the gap that we are living with when we had to move our spring walk to virtual back in April. So the goal, how that works is anyone who makes a donation of $25 or more will receive a branded We Are Stronger Together but 6 feet apart mask that can be worn by themselves, or they can choose to donate it to a frontline worker or a person with diabetes.
Very nice. Anastasia, let's talk about two major announcements having to do with type 1 and type 2 diabetes. Can you share that with us?
Absolutely. Yeah, there has been some really exciting news recently. In a finding announced just this week, there was news about what we call an anti-CD3 monoclonal antibody, or a drug called teplizumab. And this drug was found to delay the onset of type 1 diabetes, which is a fairly uncommon type of diabetes, by 3 years in participants who received a 2-week infusion of this drug compared with participants in the study who received only a placebo. All participants in this study were pre-symptomatic for type 1 diabetes, which means they all had two type 1 diabetes-related autoantibodies, and they had an abnormal blood glucose level. So this is a really significant finding, delaying the onset for up to 3 years. And then on the diabetes technology front, also announced this week, we had the FDA approval of a new continuous glucose monitor. And this is a system for adults and children ages 4 and up that monitors glucose levels. It's called a Libre 2. It's really simple to use, comparatively inexpensive. It can be worn for 2 weeks or 14 days. And what's exciting is it eliminates the need for painful finger pricks. We know these devices, continuous glucose monitors, reduce the burden of diabetes for people who have to live with it, and they do contribute to improved clinical outcomes.
Very nice. So those are huge advancements for people with diabetes. JDRF is driving research, advocacy, fundraising, Brooks. And your fundraiser will not only support your cause, it'll help everyone protect against COVID-19. How can people get these masks?
Absolutely. So if anyone's interested, they can go to StrongerTogetherMask with an S, JDLSAFE.com to participate, and there you'll find all the information. And JDRF, like you said, has had to reimagine, like many other organizations across our community. And thank you to Anastasia for sharing the impact that these dollars have. But yeah, the support is more important now than ever as we work to improve lives and cure type 1 diabetes.
So again, go to StrongerTogetherMasks.com. For a small donation, you will receive a humorously branded cloth mask from JDRF North Florida. You'll help people with diabetes, and you'll help the community by slowing the transmission of COVID-19. So I want to thank you both, Brooks Biagini, Executive Director of JDRF North Florida, Anastasia Albanese-O'Neill. She's Director of Clinical Operations with U.S. Diabetes Pediatric Division. Again, StrongerTogetherMasks.com. Thanks so much to you both.
Thanks for having you.
Well, it is our What's Good Wednesday, so we're going to cap off this show with a little bit of a moment of Zen. It comes to us from renowned local yogi and meditation leader and veteran, Dan Nevins. Take a listen.
You know, a great practice that I've started and I continue to do, and I encourage you to do, is to start a gratitude journal. It's impossible to be grateful for something and have anxiety or fear in that same moment. You know, I say that gratitude is a happiness generator. It turns what we have into enough. So all you need to do is grab a journal or notebook, even if it's used or almost full. It just doesn't matter what it looks like, just that you have something to write in. And after you've endured whatever happened during your day, right before bedtime, pull out your journal and write down literally at least one thing that you're grateful for, and make it the last thing you do before bedtime. Just a few minutes is all it will take. That few minutes will set you up for deep rest, relaxation, and a truly restorative sleep.
And don't we all need that right now? Thanks for that, Dan. And that's our show. Thanks for listening, everybody. And thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director. WJCT's news director is Jessica Palumbo. And our digital editor is Bill Bortsfield. Keep those emails coming to us. We really appreciate all the feedback. It's firstcoastconnect@wjct.org to connect with us. And if you missed any part of today's show, catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 or our podcast on our website. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9, and we'll connect with you again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.